Well, I think overall, in general, we should all be optimistic that there's room in the market for new ski areas. Not every family in the market owns a condo at a resort. Kids are in a weekend program, right? Like, where does the market go for the 3 to 5 visit family? Kids that are playing basketball, hockey, that can get away this weekend, but not the next weekend. Where's that place, right? That place is Tenny Mountain currently.
Welcome to the storm. I'm your host, Stuart Winchester, New Hampshire. I hear you. You've been asking me for this one for a long, long time, and I'm fired up to bring you the story of Tenny Mountain today. First up, a big, big thank you to my paid subscribers. Not only are you listening to this podcast 7 days before free subscribers, but your support of the Storm Skiing Journal and podcast is helping to ensure the future of independent ski journalism. This is a sustainable small business, and you have enabled that. I do, however, think that we are just getting started with the Storm, and every new paid subscriber helps. If you are currently on the free tier, I do appreciate you. And I totally get that every single one of us is on a budget and has to make decisions about where to dedicate our resources. I do want you to know that the paid tier comes with material benefits, namely a lot more content than what you're getting right now. The article previews that you see now are only about 20% of a typical Storm Skiing Journal article. And if you are not subscribed yet at all, free or paid, you can do that at stormskiing.com. You can also follow The Storm on the X platform or Instagram at Storm Ski Journal. All right, let's talk about my partner, the fractional marketing experts at Bonfire Collective. Does your marketing need a fresh perspective from industry experts? Do you need better storytelling, rebranding, advertising? Let me introduce you to Bonfire Collective, a fractional marketing team that collaborates with ski areas and outdoor brands. What does that mean? It means that Bonfire can help you rethink your approach in ways that can turbocharge your business. Bonfire Collective, for example, took over the marketing at one New Hampshire ski area and doubled revenue in 3 years. To get started, you'll want to talk to Eric over at Bonfire Collective. Eric was a co-founder of Bluebird Backcountry, the first human-powered ski area, and so he knows the ski business. You can see what Bonfire Collective can do for your ski area. Reach out to Eric at thebonfirecollective.com. That's thebonfirecollective.com. Episode 167, Dan Egan, General Manager of Tenny Mountain, New Hampshire. For all the uplifting ski stories that I try to tell, there's a lot of wreckage out there, especially in New England. A lot more lost ski areas, frankly, than live ones. A lot of sad stories of childhood memories and the mountains that hosted them faded back into the mountains forever. If you spent your youth skiing at Brody or Mount Tom or Snow Valley, Vermont, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But we do get uplifting stories as well. In 2020, Saddleback came back online after 5 years in limbo. Last season, tiny Granite Gorge, New Hampshire, fired up its lifts for the first time in nearly 4 years. Crotchet crept back from the dead after stripping the high-speed quad off of Ascutney, Vermont. And even Ascutney came back, though in drastically modified form and only on the lower mountain. But one of the most hard luck stories in New England skiing has been Tenny. Over the decades, a succession of owners have failed to find the formula to make this mountain sustainable as a business. But Tenny always comes back. And last winter, skiing sprouted once again on the slopes outside of Plymouth, New Hampshire. Will this time be different? My guest today thinks so. One quick note before we get started. When we recorded this interview on March 14th of 2024, Dan was still acting GM of Tenny Mountain. In the few weeks since, mountain officials have announced that he will be sliding into a yet-to-be-determined role that they have described as, quote, an ambassador advisory role for next ski season. However that sorts out, Tenney fans are going to love the way Dan lays out the Mountain's future and potential in our conversation. Let's go. My guest today is the general manager of Tenney Mountain, New Hampshire. Tenney offers 1,400 vertical feet, served by two chairlifts, and is wrapping up the second season of a comeback led by North Country Development Group. He is also a renowned professional skier who has been featured in 12 Warren Miller Entertainment films, as well as on Discovery, ESPN, Fox Sports, and in countless magazines, books, and videos. He is the author or co-author of three books, including, most recently, with Eric Wilbur, 30 Years in a White Haze, a story of the evolution of extreme skiing amidst history, family, and adventure. He is also a noted public speaker, consultant, and producer. Dan Egan is my guest. Dan, welcome to the storm. So fired up to have Tenney back live and to have you on the podcast to tell us all about it. How are you doing today, Dan? How's everything up in New Hampshire?
Everything's great, Stuart. Great to be here. I love life in the storm, so happy to be with you.
Great to have you here. So you haven't quite wrapped the season at Tenney. For the listeners, we are recording this on March 14th. You have two more days left, March 16th, 17th. I highly doubt I'll get this conversation live by then. But just give us the rundown here. You've seen enough of a sample size. How has your first full season, the 2023-24 ski season, gone at Tenney Mountain?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, it's so fun to bring back a local gem, you know, a place that people have so much loyalty to. And that's been my experience at Tenney a couple times now. And for me, it's really exciting to create the ski area that you want a local ski area to be. That, in my mind, is the whole motivation for doing it. Here in the White Mountains, we're surrounded by ski areas. In New Hampshire, you know, we have 17 plus ski areas, and there's room in the market for the Tenney Mountains, and I love that.
You say you get a chance to create the ski area that you want to create. What is that ski area that's in your head, and how are you actualizing that?
Well, the ski area that's in my head is the one that I grew up at, the place where the base lodge is buzzing with community and people and friends, and it's friendly, a place that is not inhibited by rules and regulations and do's and don'ts. It's a place of freedom. It's a place every time I ski that I go to in my head, that injection of youth and that I get when my dad loaded up the family truckster and took all the Egans up north. It's a place of adventure. And that's what you find, I think, when you go to independent family-focused resorts.
And how is that different from what you're seeing at, you mentioned there's a lot of ski areas in New Hampshire, right? And there's a lot of corporate-owned ski areas owned by out-of-state conglomerates. And that can be good, and that can be troublesome in other ways. What do you think is lacking in those other ski areas as far as what you just described and how you're hoping to create that at Tenney?
Value. You know, affordability, access, you know, parking lots that people greet you in and say, welcome, thank you for coming. Information, you know, I think when it comes to skiing, people want to belong. They want to be part of this culture, this lifestyle, this sport, this winter, and they don't want to be judged. They don't, you know, I did an experiment this fall, Stuart, where I went skiing locally in my jeans and, you know, I have this great pair of snowboard pants that are jeans and everybody's reactions was amazing. Like people couldn't go by without commenting whether they knew who I was or wasn't, you know, and that judgment that like, wow, this guy doesn't have, you know, the right pants on. Right.
Okay.
And that's what I see at the, you know, judgment. And at Tenney, you know, we like to say it's like everybody's welcome. You don't need a Land Rover to belong in the parking lot. And that experiment of skiing around in my jeans, I loved it because I realized like, wow, like yeah, I get on the gondola once and somebody said, doesn't grandpa wear jeans? And like, you know, just like, and then like one guy would recognize me and go, didn't dress up today, Dan, or, you know, stuff like that. And for me, it's like, you know, part of skiing, people want to belong to what we have, what we're selling, what we're creating. And as an industry, we need to wrap our arms around that inclusion and step away from exclusion. And that's kind of the key part to keeping the industry alive in my mind. And that's why I did it, because I wanted to witness it myself. Because when you start to belong, you start to become. And what do you become? You become part of this winter sports industry, which is amazing experience.
Where did you try that experiment? Multiple ski areas?
Yeah, I did. All throughout the Whites here, up and down 93. Yeah.
And did you include Tenney in that to see the reaction at home?
Well, Tenney, people were like, just so happy. You know, it's like, it was a home run. I wasn't alone, you know?
Well, you should follow the example of Jackson Hole, which had a ski and jeans day in December. I think they got a few thousand. Maybe you could beat that. We got a lot of people in New England.
I had a little jean envy on that when I saw that. they beat me to the punch.
All right. So you're back at it. Last year was Tenney's first winter back since the 2019-20 season. Didn't get the place open until February 10th. This season, you were able to open December 23rd. What was the difference between this year and last year, Dan, that allowed you to have more of a traditional full ski season?
Well, you know, last year when they opened for the short season, I think it was a little bit of an experiment. You know, the owner really wanted, Stephen Kelly wanted to see what the ski area looked like operating and get a feel for it. I was not a part of that, but I think it gave him a taste for, wow, what this could be. And when we opened in December this year, our team, our crew, you know, the staff was the difference maker. You know, we had assembled an amazing staff of locals and well-known established people in the area. And we had, in my mind, pulled off the impossible. You know, the lifts had been redone, the snowmaking revamped. And my goal for opening Christmas week was really, and I jokingly said this, a white ribbon of snow. And we did better than that. We had several white ribbons of snow and we survived the washout that came, I think it was like 10 days prior to opening. So that was a big one that impacted a lot of ski areas. And really for the marketplace to see that Tenney is serious, that we were going to be open for the entire Christmas week, come what may. And that's a real stake in the ground. That's a commitment that Stephen Kelly made and followed through with, and we were able to produce for him.
You mentioned that local talent pool, Dan. I want to hover on that for a moment. I would imagine, because there's so many ski areas in New England, there's a lot of talented workers in the ski industry. There's also, however, a lot of competition for them and a lot of well-established operations that haven't had any breaks. So how difficult or not was it for you to assemble that talented team, given that Tenney had, for the most part, been off the market for a little while and you have operations right up the road like Loon and Waterville that have resources and that have been in continuous operation that probably folks are going to want to stay at? How hard was it for you to put that team together?
It was amazing. One, we had the commitment of ownership to build a great team. And two, underneath every ski area operator is that desire to create something. And the established ski areas, there's not a lot of creation going on. There's a lot of, you know, following the path of what's been done. But at the bottom line, underneath, I believe, you know, in passionate professional ski operations, people want to create. They want to get in, roll up their sleeves and make something happen. And that's the opportunity at Tenney, right? Everything needed to be done. And you got to touch every bit of that operations. And I think for anybody who's passionate about 24/7 chaos, which is the ski resort industry, we had more than your share. And if you want more than your share of chaos, Tenney was a perfect place to be. And on top of that, there's been a lot of us over the years that have come and gone through Tenney. So there was some unfinished business for people to come back and say, we have ownership now, let's get it done.
So you were able to put together a strong team, it sounds like. How has the reaction been like in the community? And by community, I mean Plymouth and also New Hampshire and New England, just in general. Last year was a little bit of a quiet opening. People were already in their rhythms. Wasn't a season pass offered. So I don't know if a lot of people even realized Tenney was open. But now that you had it full season, you got that December opening and had a season pass, I imagine you got a little more buzz going on. What has that reaction been like, both hyper-locally and throughout the region?
You know, when it comes to being successful in marketing, I think of anything, it comes down to word of mouth. It comes down to one-on-one endorsement of, have you heard? Did you go? Are you going? I've been, right? And when you break down marketing at that level, Tenney has always had an advantage with word of mouth because, one, we're visible off the highway. Two, it's the one thing that everybody wants in the local community to happen. And in the broader community, it's an established brand. And although the brand's been tarnished by stops and starts, people know Tenney Mountain. So right down to my good friend Joan Wallen, who actually named the trails at Tenney, right, way back in the 80s, you know, you had this connection to Tenney that is a buzz, right? You have families that grew up at Tenney in the 70s and 80s, and their kids now are adults and have families. They want to come back. You have Plymouth State University, where generations of kids have come through and have skied Tenney. So I'm really proud of that word of mouth buzz that you earn, but you can't pay for. And that's what I feel about the community. People are really supportive of Tenney in that way.
You know, you've been around a long time in this industry, Dan. And I think one of the differences between your run at Tenney this time and the last time is the existence of social media. Has that helped spread the word about Tenney?
I mean, the internet has been an amazing thing, Stuart. It's like, I mean, dating all the way back to when I was the director of Ski 93, I remember when we first got email and internet, like websites, right? So, you know, social media is amazing, but what is it about social that works, right? There has to be something that's sticky. Otherwise, they scroll over you. And what we had at Tenney and have at Tenney is stickiness because we have generic social media. We have something that's really organic. And we assembled a very young, energetic team that understood social media. And I gave them really simple instruction, which was, if it looks like, smells like, or feels like a surrounding ski area, don't do it. And so, you know, you had lives, you know, you had these ski reports, which were funny, which were self-mocking, which were sort of like, yeah, it's not perfect out here, but we're having fun. We don't need to dress the ski industry up to look perfect to be successful. And I find that people are really, they trip over that, right? They want a graphic or they want an appeal that says we're on par with our neighbor. They don't create something that says we are different from our neighbor. Everybody can compete on value. Everybody can compete, you know, on snowmaking, right? Like, but it's just like we did in our staff training. Music comes down to 9 notes, but how you put those notes together matter, right? Your perspective matters. And I think that's how we did it on social media. We had a really generic, fun, lighthearted perspective on it.
So lots of good energy. Are people showing up? It takes a while for people to change their habits or try new things. Are you seeing promise and feel good about Tenney's long-term business prospects based upon this past season?
I'm an optimist, right? To me, every day is a powder day. Like I just see it that way. And I love skiing. And what I love is when people show up and they mirror that enthusiasm, right? And that's how I kind of viewed the traction that Tenney got this year, was the enthusiasm. And it was amazing to see the parking lot go from empty to a quarter full, half full, full spare parking lot, right? And we had a February, which was exactly what I had predicted. And I think if we didn't lose Christmas week and March wasn't a total washout, we were on track for what we had all hoped it would be. And to see February perform the way it did was amazing. And how it performed was the lift line started to form, right? And the bar was cranking, the restaurant was happening, the events were buzzing. And that's really was good. So very hopeful that we, you know, and what people believed in us because they saw that the product was on the hill.
What's your ideal season at Tenney, Dan? A lot of New England ski areas can stretch it from November to early April. And I'm not suggesting you try to compete with Killington or anything, but what would you like to see Tenney reach toward? You're wrapping up about a 3-month season, which is great, but I'd imagine you want a little more.
Yeah, of course we want a little more. My goal for Tenney is a mid-December open. That's what I did 20 years ago, was a December 12th opening 2 years in a row. And really, St. Paddy's Day to the end of March is the season, right? April, for a ski area our size currently, I think is a bit of a stretch and, you know, comes down to payroll and what we're willing to invest in April. But I think mid-December to end of March is a fair value for our season pass holders and lift ticket holders. And I think that's an achievable goal. Opening on the 23rd, having a full Christmas week with the weather we had last year kind of proves, I think, that we can do it. And with the current slate of improvement infrastructure-wise, it would be nice to see a mid-December open.
Yeah, it's a respectable season, and I think you have people's attention. You know, you mentioned that this is your second time working at Tenney. This is a ski area that has just had a lot of starts and stops and has just, I don't want to say never found the right formula, but just hasn't found that consistent way to keep going year after year, like a Gunstock or Loon or whatever. So this time opening, you were closed for 3 years from the end of 2020 to February last year. So looking at the investor group and the energy behind it and the team you have, why is this time different, Dan? Why should we be optimistic that Tenney will work at last long term?
Well, I think overall, in general, we should all be optimistic that there's room in the market for new ski areas, right? There's room in the market for value. Not every family in the market owns a condo at a resort. Kids are in a weekend program, right? Like, where does the market go for the 3 to 5 visit family, right? Kids that are playing basketball, hockey, that can get away this weekend, but not the next weekend. Where's that place, right? That place is Tenney Mountain currently, and others, Whaleback, arguably Magic, right? Black. There's room in the marketplace. So one, the market can absorb this play. Two, you know, the ownership group, when I first read about the new ownership group at Tenney, what really inspired me was they're builders. They understand how to build something out, right? And they have scale, they have leverage, they have people, they have systems, they have crews that can help the dream of Tenney come alive, whether that's additional condos, workforce housing, hotels, all those sort of things, right? A lot of resort owners, you know, if you're a long-term ski industry person or owner, if you haven't developed real estate, it's you need an outside developer to do it, right? So here it's kind of reverse. We have an owner that knows how to do that. And that's what Tenney desperately needs. That's what the community needs. And that's what's starting to happen. So for me, that vision is solid. And the current commitment, I mean, Stuart, if you look at what the investment has been in Tenney, and we did a study on this as compared to other ski areas in our group around New England, even in the last 5 to 10 years, the current investment is on par or far better than that outside of Saddleback.
Yeah, I want to get into those investments in a moment. First, though, can you color in the ownership group for us a little bit? Who is behind North Country Development Group, and what is driving them to bring Tenney back?
Timberline Construction and Timberline Communication are two well-established New England region and national companies. One is a telecommunication company with cell phone towers and specializing in communications, and has done communications for Gillette Stadium, Fenway Park, the Big Dig in Boston, right? The other, the construction company, has built the worldwide headquarters for Puma, Timberland, and other, and biotech and around the Boston and greater Boston area. So these are two companies owned by Stephen Kelly that have a proven track record of getting things done. So that track record, to me, holds a lot of weight for what Tenney can be. And Stephen has proven himself to be committed to this beyond mention. And his vision for Tenney is way bigger than Tenney looks now. Like all plans, we have to go from A to B, right? We have to get the infrastructure right as we go forward. But I see a commitment to do that.
I don't want to put you in a position where you're speaking for Stephen, but just based on your conversations and your actions with him, what do you think is driving him to do this? Did he grow up at Tenney? Does he just love skiing? Does he think it's going to be a great business? Kind of what can you tell us about why he's doing this?
Well, I asked Stephen why he would hire an extreme skier to help him do it. and he said that we both share the crazy gene. And, and I think he's right about that. You know, I think, you know, I tell people all the time, look, I jumped off cliffs for a living. So Don't expect me to act any other way in business. I'm going towards the edge and I'm going to go over it and I'm going to hit it with speed. And I think I've found an equal and opposite force in Stephen in commitment to hitting that with speed.
So it sounds like he has a big vision and that he thinks you're the guy that's crazy enough to get it done. What can you tell us about that vision and what you and Stephen ultimately want Tenney to be?
Well, we want Tenney to be a driving force in the region for not only recreation, but for economics. And we want to have an impact in central New Hampshire that's long lasting. And that long lasting vision includes recreation, but it includes housing, it includes Four Seasons, it includes business and innovation. And I think that vision comes together, one, because there's a lot of private land at Tenney, a lot of buildable land at Tenney. And quite honestly, the past ownership groups have not been anchored in that development of that land. The land track at Tenney is so big and so impactful that the town of Plymouth has, you know, outside of the purchase from Stephen Kelly, has allocated that to development in their future plans. So one, it's got a major traffic corridor, right? East, west, it's 7 minutes off the highway. North, south, you have recreation, some of the best climbing in New England and Rumney, and one of the most cleanest and beautiful lakes in New England in Newfound Lake, right? So you have tourism driving it, you have daily traffic count driving it. And to match that demand is around development, whether that be market priced housing, resort type style housing, and workforce housing. All of that's in the mix. And that's Stephen's vision.
Is there more developable ski terrain?
Yeah. I mean, the dream of Tenney, going all the way back to the 80s and the early developers, is other pods of skiing. And that's, you know, well in our plans and what's being discussed when we launch the Tenney Vision website coming up here at the end of the year. But with that said, personally, as a person who skied all over the world, Tenney keeps me interested as it is. I'm excited to ski Tenney. And I think some people kind of roll their eyes when I say that, but it's really true. I get fired up to ski Sweet Williams, to ski Edelweiss, to ski, you know, Venus Flytrap, these trails that are really classic New England trails. We just don't say it. We have it. These trails wind, twist, and dip over bridges and next to streams and through the woods. And, you know, the engineers want to widen them for snowmaking. And I'm saying, no, leave them alone. We need to adapt to technology to keep this character. And there's more of that down the road. And there's more of that to the north of the ski area, which is developable.
It is such a fun trail network. And I write about this a lot, Dan, this notion of making a mountain interesting. And some operators are better at it than others. There's sort of a tendency in New England to groom everyone every night. I get it. That's the demographic. That's what people want. But I like the variety. And I like the mountains like Smugs or Mad River that vary it up and have a lot of glades and have some bumps. What does that mean to you to create an interesting mountain and continue to make Tenney a novel place to ski that doesn't feel like any other ski area in New Hampshire?
Well, you know, snowmaking and grooming are a blessing and a curse for skiers, right? They give us the surface that is the easiest to ski. And in you know, really since the early 90s and forward, that means wider trails, right? It's efficient. It's a cost savings thing to groom and to make snow on. But what's lost? What's lost is the intention of the turn. And to go back to a trail that winds, dips, and twists, and is may not be as elegantly groomed, although our grooming is excellent, it brings back the intention because now you're going to ski the fall line. Now you're going to lean into what the trail is providing you. And intention in skiing is everything, because once you start to be intentive about where you turn, why, where you go, and why, that's applicable to skiing any mountain in the world. And that's why traditionally New England has been at the cornerstone of some of the best skiers on the planet, because we have terrain that demands technique. And when you wipe out that trail, you wipe out technique. So what are we left with? we're left with a bunch of tail skidding, you know, forward back leaning skiers that don't have intention of where to turn and why. And when you look at Tenney for a value play, low lift ticket place, our level of skiing is very high. And it's not that you need to be a great skier to ski our trails. It's that our trails make you a great skier. And that's been my hallmark in of my entire career is growing up on trails like that here in New England.
So you have a great mountain for that mentality and that sort of skiing. You mentioned that the new owners have put a lot into the infrastructure. I think that gets lost a little bit because it's not like Loon where they put up a new $20 million A-person lift and you can just point to the new lift. You still have these old chairlifts and sometimes things like snowmaking are a little more subtle. So break this down for us. Run us through the investments and what the new owners have done to modernize Tenney Mountain.
Well, first of all, let's take the Hornet chairlift. It's the longest, oldest, slowest chairlift in the state, right? And I love it. People may, you know, roll their eyes about the Hornet at the bottom, but at the top, it's a totally different experience. They've been transformed, right? They've been transported to someplace else, either alone on that chairlift or with a conversation with a family or a friend or a stranger they didn't know they would have, right? That's special. And that doesn't happen anymore really on eight packs and six packs and even quads. So it's easy to look at Loon and say, look, they've got an eight pack and they've got incredible snowmaking, which they do. They can recover quicker than any of us, arguably in New England after a storm, right? After a rain. I love that. I ski Loon for those reasons, right? It's amazing. But that didn't happen overnight. That's been a series of really 20 plus years of investment in their snowmaking and lift system. They've been committed to it and they've been a consistent commitment to it. And they've become a class of their own really in New Hampshire. I think it's untouchable. It's an amazing place. What does our infrastructure and investment look like? It's underground. It's in the early days of what you couldn't see at Loon 20 years ago. It's new pipe, right? It's new pumps. It's the search for more water and more water storage, the things that's really not that sexy, right? But it does provide the skiing surface we need to survive in today's current weather structure here in New England. So, you know, our investment looks like, one, when you showed up at Tenney this year, you saw the lifts, not shiny and new, but at least polished, right? Upkept, new slats, new paint, new seat pads, like somebody cares, which matters, right? You saw the commitment to snowmaking in that we were open in a really rough December and made it through Christmas week without closing and right into January and Martin Luther King and then the great February. And what's that look like moving forward? That looks like a revamped bottom of the base lodge for rentals next year, for ski school, for retail. That looks like expanded space for the restaurant and the cafeteria. That looks like a new snowmaking plan that potentially, instead of just opening the triple at Christmas, we open the double and the triple together at Christmas, which is what the skier makes the ski area complete. So the snowmaking plan we have for next year, the infrastructure for the snowmaking plan is for Tenney a game changer. And what that will look like is that will look like we're a viable operation for a mid-December open.
Gosh, there's so much in there, Dan. I want to linger on the Hornet lift for a moment. That's a 1964 Staedtli lift. It is, I love the way you describe it. It really does feel like it's transporting you back in time. It has those old school lattice towers. Now, for better or worse, lifts tend to define ski areas, particularly in New England, and they tend to be part of the identity of them and how people think about them. Long term, do you think Tenney can thrive as a ski area with its workhorse lift being this slow, old, but very charming, very cool, very classic, but slow and old double chair? Or do you think eventually you're going to need to put in a high-speed lift? I mean, you do have ski areas that have fixed grips in New England, Magic, Smuggler's Notch, Mad River Glen, and they're doing just fine. So I'm not saying it can't work. I'm just wondering where your head is at. Are you going to try to make a go of it long term with that? Or do you think at some point you need to modernize?
Well, the lift system, you know, imagine, Stuart, and you know this to be true, there's a generation of kids growing up that think chairlifts are have heated seats and bubbles, right?
Right.
They don't know differently, right? So that's a good and a bad thing. I'm not going to argue against innovation and new lifts. I love the new lifts, and I love Boyne's commitment to new lifts across the country. I'm a part of that, and I love that. You know, at Tenney, we're going to need a lift or two. We're going to need carpets. We're going to need high speed. We're having a conversation on what that lift looks like, but it's clear that, you know, obviously Tenney needs more than one lift. And to compete in today's marketplace, we need that. Now, there is a piece of the market that, you know, has nostalgia for our fixed grips and others' fixed grips, whether it be Mad River or Magic, right? But that lift needs to be replaced. We need snowmaking, right? And we need lifts, and we need development at the base to support all that. And so the question is, when you go back to the early days of quads, and particularly in New Hampshire, because that's what I know best, whether it was the quad at Wildcat, the quad at Waterville when it first went in, the first quad when it went in at Bretton Woods, right? Some of those lifts, or look at Ragged, that six pack, right? Some of those lifts, the investment was a little bit unsustainable, and it has lingered with those resorts for decades, right? And there was, back then, there was a learning curve on how to run these things, what sort of mechanics do we need, all of that sort of thing, right? So that's flushed out now. We know the lifts, we know how they work, we actually know how long they last, and unfortunately, how long they don't last. Like, those quads need to be replaced today. So there's a real cost to putting in a high-speed lifts that, you know, is in the multi-millions that doesn't have the life expectancy of our double. And then when you really look at it, and this is what the consumers don't understand, is most of those lifts don't put necessarily more people on the hill. There's fewer chairs. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But the strategy of chairlifts is to hang people in the air, right? Don't overload the trails. And at Tenney, we have a really interesting mix. We have capacity for a new lift, and that will not overcrowd our trails. Like, that's awesome, right? So we have a lot of capacity on the trail side for people. And I think that the lift that goes in, and if I had to, you know, spitball and throw something out there, I would say, you know, 3 to 5 years, there's a lift. That lift will be state of the art. I mean, Stephen Kelly is committed to that. And that gives me a lot of confidence in moving forward. So the fact that we're starting to look at it, we're discussing what it would be, all of that in my first year is encouraging looking forward.
And what are those options you're considering? Are you thinking a quad, maybe a six pack? You do have a big trail network.
Well, you know the joke, right? What's the worst thing about a six pack? Six people, right? Like, it's like, I don't know who's on the chair with me. I don't never get to meet that person. Now, some skiers may like that, because they're wearing music and they don't intend to talk to me, but I don't love it. At least with a quad, you still have some sort of interaction, right? And really, I think what lends itself to us is a quad. I don't know that we need a six pack of Tenney at where the current Hornet is. Tenney has arguably two summits, although they're not far apart, and there's not a lot of height differential there. But going to the summit with some sort of base lodge up there, that's a whole different animal and what that looks like, particularly if we move beginner terrain to the top, because the Achilles heel of Tenney is beginner terrain, and we could have a great beginner pod at the summit. So we're looking at those sorts of things and, you know, trying to address that.
That's really interesting because, yeah, Tenney has, for the listeners, if you look at the trail map, there's a little section on the lower left that has its own separate lift and is across the road where you have to go and ride a Pama. Long term, it sounds like you mentioned some carpets, you mentioned maybe up top. Just take us a little bit more into long term, how you'd like to evolve your beginner terrain at Tenney.
Yeah, I mean, beginner terrain probably, I know going forward, is going to be a huge part, right? Because unfortunately, in the industry as a whole has walked away from learn to ski. Where it was a focus 15, 20 years ago, it's not today. And there's demand for learn to ski. We recognize that, one, that piece of the market that's important and I think critical for Tenney moving forward for building long-term loyal clients. And two, we need to etch out the terrain that makes that possible, whether it's terrain-based learning, right? Or just accessibility. And right now the platter lift is a great lift. It's a great area for learning. It's a great area for our tubing, but both of those things need to be expanded. So we're looking at that pretty hard on how we expand that terrain. And that includes regrading some existing trails that are part of the Hornet network to make them a true green or novice top to bottom.
You know, I'm a big fan of mountaintop or mid-mountain beginner areas because it, for a few reasons, it moves people out of the chaos. It's less intimidating up there, I think. And it also makes them feel more a part of it, right? Because if you're just at the bottom of the mountain, you're just really seeing the parking lot and you're not enjoying those views. So you go to a place like Beaver Creek, where they have all this terrific green terrain up top, and it really gives you that alpine experience. The issue is you have to get the skiers back down, right? Because they're not going to be able to ski those blue or black runs on the way back down. Do you have a green pathway mapped out that you could take down Tenney, or are you talking about putting in some kind of lift that folks could download at the end of the day if you were to put a beginner area up top?
A plan that encompasses all of that, right? We have a trail now that can be a true novice trail to the bottom, but it needs some improvements, right? There's some classic trails in New England from the summits, you know, whether it be Bretton Woods, three-ways home or 3 miles home, that are beautiful, long beginner trails for off the top, right? We've got a plan for that at Tenney. And we're looking at that top pod with a download as, and I 100% agree, you know, a lot of places in Europe, the learn to ski is up top and the download is an everyday event. It's not a death before download play, right? It's like Downloading is acceptable and welcome and invited. And I think, you know, Big Sky, where I spend a big part of my winter as well, that's the plan there at Big Sky is a mid-station gondola with a learning pod at mid-station and up top. So I think these are coming into play more and more here in the States, and that's important look on a lot of levels. But one, getting those consumers in the lift line, on the lift, and up to where they can see the views and see the surrounding totally includes them way more. But so do other things. What's that look like? That looks like branded skis that aren't different for rental and snowboard, right? So they're part of right away. So they're apparently not wearing jeans when they join us, right? And I mean that, you know, not physically, right? Like giving them a branded snowboard that looks like a branded snowboard so they're not an outcast from the beginning. All of that is inclusive. And we need to really welcome skiers and educate them along the way to like, you know, it's okay. You don't need a Patagonia to come here, right? Like it's accepted and it's welcome. And I think, you know, whether it's Mad River, Bolton, Magic, Tenney, Whaleback, you see that inclusion in just the customer base and what they're wearing.
So this beginner terrain up top that you're referring to, is that the top of Hornet, or there was a summit expansion proposed a number of decades ago that would have been more moderate terrain? Is it over there, which is what I'm talking about, is skiers left and sort of up the hill? Where is this terrain that you're referring to?
Yeah, it's skiers left, lookers right, above the Sweet William pod. So, you know, the Sweet William expansion in the 80s was an awesome expansion, right? Those trails, Sunflower, Sweet Williams, Venus Flytrap are amazing trails. And above that is really great terrain for what we're looking at.
You mentioned there was more skiable terrain opportunity, expansion opportunities. Where are those in relation to the current trail map?
Lookers right, as you go north on that ridge, there is expandable terrain and really interesting terrain. And that's where it would go.
What's the vertical over there? Is it similar?
Yeah, pretty similar. I mean, of course, you know, that's where the long green trail home would be, right? It would loop along that ridge and then, you know, sort of swoop around the outer edge of the developable terrain. And then within that boundary is very interesting terrain. Right now, it's all been gladed. So we have, you know, a lot of people out there that don't want to see a change because they're out there skiing the glades when we have snow. But that's really fun skiing.
That's really exciting. What's the scale of that? How many acres are out there?
That's a good question. You know, I'm not one for that detail, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I know it's fun and I've been out there, but sorry, my brain doesn't work that way.
Yeah, we'll just have to keep staring at this green on the map and hoping you cut your way north sooner or later. So what about the triple chair Dan, we talked about the Hornet. We talked about kind of the beginner lifts. Long term, are you pretty happy with the triple chair, where it is, what it is? It's not nearly as old as the double.
I mean, that's a workhorse too. That chair is amazing. It's been running amazing. And I do want to just credit our lift mechanics this year, because they've all come up to me and said, the lifts are spinning every day, all day, right? Like, that's a huge feather in our cap for Tenney. That was not the case in past ownership. So to have the lifts running without interruption is amazing. So both the Eclipse and the Hornet, you know, I credit our lift mechanics and ops teams for making that happen. And that triple is a great lift. It just is lacking beginner terrain, right? It's like almost beginner, and then there's like a little bit of a pitch. But again, that brings out intentional learning. That brings out a lot of skill set, right? Skiing shouldn't be simple or easy, quote unquote, right? Skiing is for the adventurous, so buckle up. But, you know, I think that lift is dated as well. And I don't think that lift will, you know, long term be the one moving forward.
And would you look for another fixed grip lift there? Have you put any thought into that?
I mean, it's a good spot for a fixed grip because it's a good ride. And I think from development and investment levels, like, what's going to be the benefit of a detached there? You know, I'm still a fan of surface lifts, T-bars, and others to help expansion. I think they've often been overlooked really in the last 20 years. I love what Waterville has done with their top summit T-bar and what they've developed that into for U.S. snowboard team training, ski racing, and everything else that comes with that as a separate pod. So you might see something like that at Tenney, where it's a lift that accesses terrain where people can learn and people can compete.
I love that. I'm a big fan of surface lifts for a few different reasons. One is that they are just more resilient in the wind in general. And two, I asked Tim Smith, the general manager of Waterville Valley, how much did that T-bar cost you? He's like, $700,000.
That's right there, bro. Yeah.
You know? And so when a high-speed lift is running $10 million, that's a pretty compelling argument to throw a surface lift in there.
I mean, it's 100%. And it's like, they're warmer lifts to ride, right? They're building skill on the way up, right? They're adventurous. They're fun, and they access terrain just as quickly. Whether it's been the Middlesill expansion with that T-bar, you know, what Tim did at Waterville Valley, there's plenty of examples of this. And there's also examples all throughout New Hampshire and New England where those lifts have come out, and some of that terrain hasn't been skied the way we used to ski it. So I'm a huge, huge, you know, supporter of it. Sometimes people like the bright and shiny new thing, right? But often the practical thing is the way forward.
I think that's what's holding a lot of ski areas back, is they're too focused on the bright and shiny and not on the practical, just getting folks up. So what's the opportunity, Dan? It seems like you have a couple lit trails right now, but you're in a college town. You have Plymouth right nearby. What do you think the opportunity is for night skiing at Tenney? Have you thought much about that?
I mean, I did night skiing 20 years ago at Tenney, and of course, now it's a different proposition investment-wise. So I'm pro night skiing because I grew up skiing at night at Blue Hills, just outside of Boston, and honed my race technique in the shadows and the ruts. That proved to be very valuable. So I'm a huge fan. The question is, what's the bed base? Will it support it? Does the weather support it? Because we have cold, you know, some really cold nights. And what's the long-term viability? We're currently talking about lights with a new surface lift or moving the platter into the triple pod, which will provide terrain park and, you know, night league racing without lighting the whole triple. I think that's a really value play and will provide the moving forward. When you look at, of course, the legends of night skiing, particularly in New England, whether it's Wachusett, right? Gunstock, Pat's Peak, right? I mean, they're doing a complete season at night, right? Of people. Like, that's an amazing feat. But what do they have? They have metro areas nearby, right? That's driving that traffic. But they also have a culture of schools that their school programs are night programs. Here in the Whites, our school programs are day programs. So changing that culture to getting these schools to come at night, I don't know if that's in the cards for the school systems, right? And you need that. You see Bolton has it. You see the ones that are anchored in that business have definable demographics that support night. So night skiing isn't like a nice to have or a gotta have. There needs to be an investment play around doing it. It's not just a feel good, hey, we're open at night. And then C, not have the traffic to support the payroll. And I think we need to really take a deep dive and look at that. If we have a hotel, if we have a resort that has people staying at Tenney, I think it becomes a different proposition.
So Tenney did have a night skiing operation when you were GM there 22 years ago?
We did, yeah. It was, yeah.
Where was it? Did they go to the top of the double, top of the triple?
No, top of the triple. And we had a good race league. I was jumping in the gate one night to race, and this guy yells, "Hey, Egan, I saw your name last week." And I'm thinking, "Oh, yeah, of course, where?" And he goes, "Behind mine." And so I need a rematch with that guy. So
okay, all right.
So we need to put the lights in.
So it's really interesting that you ran this ski area before. And in 2002 doesn't sound like a long time ago, but my gosh, the world has changed a lot in the last 22 years. And not just the greater world we live in, but skiing and ski culture. Really would love to get your point of view, Dan, between running Tenney in 2002 for the few seasons that you did and running Tenney today. How are those experiences different based upon the world we live in and the culture we're grounded in? What's different about it and what's the same?
Yeah, well, I mean, what's different is I didn't have gray hair or need glasses. But you bring up a good point. The culture of skiing has changed. The marketplace has changed. And the weather pattern has changed. And for Tenney, the infrastructure has changed. So the reality of that, although when I reopened Tenney in 2002, it had been closed for 18 months, a lot of the infrastructure was intact, although it was dated then. Diesel pumps and right angle drives, all that. You know, the reason why there's been no traditional ski area group invested in Tenney was the infrastructure that's desperately needed at Tenney to be upgraded. And then you think about culture. What's changed in our culture? Lift ticket price. The day lift ticket price is out of hand. And the ski industry has made a mark discounting to the core market. And they've walked away from the entry market. When you think about trial and conversion that the NSAA did in the 90s, and the success they had, you could go to any marketing director at the time. They would have a learn to ski offer. You know, in some places you were getting a pair of skis or a season pass after three or four visits. And they would tell you the actual conversion rate of trial and retention. Ask that to a ski marketing person now. They don't know what you're talking about. It's not even on their list. They've let it go because what are they focused on? They're focused on the discount multi-resort pass. And they don't care about the learn to ski market. NSAA is no longer talking about trial and retention. So that's changed. That's a huge loss for the ski industry. That's an opportunity for Tenney and others to say, look, you're welcome here. You belong here. We have a rental package that suits you, and we have a plan to convert you to a lifelong skier. And you don't have to mortgage your house on a day pass to do it. But I would say, Stuart, without a doubt, this is the one thing that has changed in the ski industry since I last ran the resort. That is the outward customer-facing customer service. It's been replaced with online sales. And when you walk up to any ticket window of any established resort, and that ticket person says to that person, hey, you could have saved money online, that is an insult. And that is not customer service. You are just telling somebody you don't belong here. If you knew better, you would have purchased online. And that consumer who drove X number of hours with kids in their car who were looking for a fun day out gets slapped in the face with the opening line. And to me, that has changed in the ski industry dramatically. That never would have happened before. Why aren't we offering at the ticket window the same discount you could have got online? It's a smaller percentage of consumers at the ticket window. We wouldn't be hurt by it, and we would be building with it. And the established resorts and all of these corporations don't do that. And to me, that's a huge loss. It's why would we model ourselves after the airline industry? It doesn't make sense.
So you have an opportunity at Tenney to run things in a different way, in particular with those different learning packages and that setup that you were talking about. How's your evolution been toward that, toward those sort of learn and get your gear? And I Sugarbush, I believe, had a program like that, and maybe they still do run it. But have you been able to make some progress in establishing that? Because I know it's one thing to want it, but you need all the trained staff, you need the systems in place. So how much progress have you been able to make toward that vision of making Tenney a better learn to ski area?
Well, it's a great question. This year, we chose not to try because we didn't have rentals and I didn't have an established ski school. That's changing. That's one of the biggest changes you'll see at Tenney moving forward is new rentals, a new rental space, and ski school with learn to ski packages. So that's a stake we're going to put in the ground. That's a play we're going to make. And we see a lot of upside to that play. But this year, it was too much to bite off and we purposely did not do it. That was intention. But moving forward, it's in our intention to expand that.
I want to go back to an experiment that Tenney did in warm weather snowmaking. And I want to tie it into what you're saying right now. And I know you were part of this. So as I'm sure you saw, Ski Ward near your hometown in Massachusetts was the first to open in North America last year. And they did it with one of these $600,000 warm weather snowmaking machines. And that brought up a lot of comparisons to Tenney's experiments with this back in the early 2000s. And when I talked to the folks at Ski Ward, it was really interesting the way they positioned it. They said, well, this is never going to be, it's never going to probably cover our hill top to bottom, but it gives us a really nice little area around the magic carpet. And we can extend our learn to ski programs for children, which we always have more demand for than supply. So we can extend those out 3 weeks earlier or 6 weeks earlier as it was. And then when it is time to make snow on the main part of the hill, we don't have to focus there because we already have snow there. So curious about your first experience with warm weather snowmaking at Tenney 20 years ago, 22 years ago, whatever it was, why that didn't work out. And if you see a place for it in the modern skiing ecosystem.
One thing I learned about making snow at any temperature is snow melts, right? So, but I'm a believer. I was a believer then and I'm a believer now. What do these systems offer us? They offer us coverage in high traffic areas that you normally can't cover, right? At temperatures you can't cover. Back in when we had the ice making machine, which was what it was, you know, I went to every ski area south of DC, everyone with the technology. I drove down and visited every one of them. And I loved it because I love ski areas. And it was fascinating to meet the operators and talk. But the ski industry mindset in operations is 28 degrees and cooler, right? Most of your ski ops guys can quote you how many acres they can make and what pressure, and they're really proud of their pump systems and all that stuff, right? But there's a limit, and that is temperature. And what we're seeing in New England and south of us is fewer snowmaking days. It's nobody can argue that, right? So we need a solution for that. That solution is going to be technology. Is that solution going to be indoors as we see in Jersey, right? Or around the world where they're very viable options, I believe. Or is it going to be that technology that's inside those domes coming outside, right? Which is pliable. When I saw Ski Ward, you know, I bowed and said, nice work, right? That's awesome. Because we were the first ski area open in the winter of this fall of 2003. Or 04. And I was able to sell a $20 hiking ticket.
Okay. That's cool.
And we had, you know, Cody Marshall and Tucker Marshall, some of the best ski racers in the country from Killington, training at Tenney, you know, albeit not a lot of gates, they came. And so you saw that there was demand. But what we also did back at Tenney back then was we tubed all summer.
Oh, cool.
We did 3,000 plus tubers in the summer.
Oh, wow.
And we ran, which is something I'm really proud of, the July 4th Big Air, right?
Jeez.
And we had Simon Dumont there, a 12-year-old Simon Dumont. We had nice. J.P. Claire from Canada there, right? God bless him. He's gone. So we stuck a flag in the ground that the market responded to, both recreationally with tubing, specialty with new school back then, and in the fall with racing. All of those markets are pliable. The ski areas can't survive in the winter. We need to be pliable year round, right? There's no argument there. Everybody agrees. And I think part of that includes these early snowmaking options in the right place at the right time. Shade helps. I mean, a lot of people realize this, but the average mean temperature in New Hampshire is 50 or below. So that's somewhat sustainable on the right trail with the right shade in the right place. I think Ward's onto something. I was glad to see it back. The company Snow Magic that I worked for 22 years ago is still doing it. They're still making snow in stadiums around the country and the world, bringing snow to Atlanta and other warm places and introducing our sport to a big audience.
So it sounds like you had some success with it. Ultimately, according to New England Ski History website, you sold that machine to some operation in Alabama, and it was really just that one summer. So why did it end up being a short-term experiment at Tenney the first time around?
Really, it comes down to investment. I mean, my understanding at the time was the snowmaking company was investing in Tenney, not Tenney was investing in the snowmaking company. At Tenney, we did not create the cash flow to sustain the snowmaking company. And my understanding at the beginning was that the snowmaking company had the investment to sustain Tenney. So that was clear pretty early on, that relationship, I thought, of investment was inverse. But those machines, you know, we installed the first outdoor skiing in England with that machine. I don't believe that's still operating. I know at Stone Mountain in Georgia, I think they're still operating. Hank Aaron at the Mobile Bears got involved. And I know that the current day, the military is using that machine and machines like it for training and built and throwing snow in their bases for training purposes. So the technology has proven out. It just took longer than everybody thought. And I guess that's always the way, unfortunately.
So it sounds like you're very open-minded about it. Take us through Tenney's current snowmaking system, because from what I understand, they bought a ton of, I want to say Techno-Alpine guns last year, but set me straight here. What's your current coverage look like? What's your current system? How much snow can you put out? Just what can you tell us about what you've built there at Tenney over the last couple of years?
Well, all snowmaking is about water storage, right? How much water can you put up on the hill and how fast can you get it up there and how many nights do you have to do it? You know, we're currently working on our water supply issues, and I think we have a viable plan moving forward, which will impact us as soon as next year. What that will do, in addition to new pipes and new pumps, state-of-the-art, converting from diesel to electric, will provide enough firepower on paper to open both lifts. And that's the goal, right? Tenney's on life support. We have to get off life support. This isn't about expanding yet. This is about getting off life support and being open about that, right? You know, we have infrastructure that's failing, that's been around a long time. The current system, you know, is a museum. And for any of those younger snowmakers out there, you should come see how we used to make snow and what it takes to make snow in this way, right? And it brings up an interesting conversation because people are used to high efficiency guns and high pressure and a lot of water. But when you don't have a lot of water and you don't have a lot of pressure, the old land guns make a lot of snow. The downside is they cost a lot of money. So we're still sorting through that from a budgetary issue on how to do it, what's best to coverage, what part of the hill, and the strategy around that. So I think when you learn the art of snowmaking, and that's what it really takes, is somebody who understands weather and pressure and water and the mix of all that. Tenney's a great experiment for that. But moving forward, thanks to HKD and our other partners, we'll have a modern looking system. The Crotchet Mountain in New Hampshire is probably, I believe, still the newest snowmaking system that was installed by the old owner, Peak, right? And if you've ever been there, you should go. If you haven't been, that pump house is amazing, right? It's immaculate. It's all automated. It's not dirty. It's clean. They turn on all their lights on every trail at night. And so the snowmakers aren't working in the dark and they can cover all the trails. That is a fascinating system. It's state of the art. I think it's really, I think arguably the best snowmaking in New England in the furthest south. It doesn't get a lot of coverage, you know, notoriety. So it's easy to look at Loon. They have a ton of water. They've got a ton of pressure. But again, they've been investing in that system for really 30 years. And now we see the benefits of that. So what's that say? That says as resort operators, we need a lot of long-term planning, and we have to be willing to do the non-sexy stuff now to look great down the road.
So where do you draw your water from now, Dan? And where are you hoping to expand that to?
Well, we currently have a pond that is arguably too small. It's no secret. Future water will come with more storage. So the building of ponds, which we're permitting for now, and hitting existing water sources that are there that are not pumped into the existing pond to replenish that pond. Unfortunately, it's been so warm this year that the water never ran out.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's not a great thing. So you're going to see more water storage. You're going to see ponds. You're going to see a potential pipeline down the road to the local river. And then some other, I think, pretty unique ideas to get water out of the ground and into the existing pond.
Well, one thing, so you had a lot of work to do on the snowmaking, it sounds like. But one thing I was really impressed by when I skied at Tenney last year was that base lodge building, really modern, great food, fun atmosphere. I was just not expecting that, just given the age of the other infrastructure. Talk a little bit about that building and how maybe that exemplifies the direction you want to take Tenney into long term.
To me, it's a classic New England base lodge. You know, it's like, it's wide open, full of picnic tables, and welcoming to families and skiers of all abilities and all types. And that atmosphere is hard to replace, I think, and unfortunately slipping away at other ski areas. You know, COVID changed the look of base lodge, right? It changed how we look at capacity. It changed how we look at bag storage and that sort of thing. Any ski area that's charging more than $100 or more for skiing and then asking you to put your boots in a cubby outside in the freezing cold, to me, is an insult. That, like, I scratch my head at that. Like, are you asking us to change in the car and stay out of your base lodge? Do you not want us to gather with our families and friends and linger? And you don't value the warmth of my feet outside or inside? Like, there's a lot of levels to that. And I understand people's arguments about clutter and underneath, but we don't have to walk away from that in the ski industry to have a good experience. And I just find, as a New England, lifelong New Englander, and somebody whose my roots are in these base lodges, I'll never forget when I first went outside in my early 20s, out west in my early 20s, to discover that some of the biggest ski resorts in Utah don't have base lodges. I was like,
right,
where do I put my shoes? Like, I was completely lost. I was in a mall, right?
Right.
And the idea of a locker and, you know, back then a quarter or 50 cent, like, I wouldn't do it, right?
Right.
And I still don't. I'll throw my shoes in a backpack and go skiing for the day, right? And I just think the soul of skiing is eroded there at that level. Brown baggers, please, you're welcome at Tenney. Like, it's okay. If you want a brown bag, you know, come. Like, you're not a second-class citizen if you're being value-minded. Matter of fact, we're like-minded. We're aligned with you. You don't hear that message in skiing today.
Yeah, it's great to have a place like that back. You know, Dan, as you look at long-term growth, you mentioned earlier there's a ton of developable land around Tenney. The town of Plymouth is kind of planning for that. There's been stops and starts on condo developments around the base. New England doesn't have as many slopeside lodging opportunities as you would maybe suppose. And there seems to be an opportunity for you to build more of a community there. There's also a big opportunity for day skiers, given that you write off I-93. As you look at that potential around Tenney, I'm not sure how much of that you control or how much of that is working with partners, but how big of a part of Tenney's future do you think it is to build up the developments immediately around and give folks those ski in, ski out options for that kind of lifestyle?
Front and center. I mean, one of the things I appreciate about Stephen Kelly is he loves community. And, you know, his community in his youth is Boston, right? And those neighborhoods where there's a lot of loyalty and there's a lot of trust and there's a lot of support inside the neighborhood. That's what he wants to build at Tenney. And I'm all for that. Skiing for me is a worldwide community. I do have that community worldwide. And I want to recreate that community at Tenney, as does he. So what's that look like? That does look like housing of all levels at Tenney for the community, both slopeside, boutique hotels, workforce housing. It looks like all of the above. And we have the land and we have the owner that knows how to do that. So to me, that's very promising. It's exciting to see that. We will become New England's newest ski area development, which is really exciting because you're right. A lot of these ski areas on public lands don't have that opportunity. And we do have that opportunity.
So I want to linger on what you said about community for a moment. That seemed to be an important part of your upbringing and growing up around Boston and with a big family and skiing. Can you talk a little bit about growing up the way you did and how that informs how you want to steer Tenney into the future?
Well, I think, you know, skiing at the root is generational, right? That's been proven over and over and over as a key strength to the industry that one generation teaches another, right? And, you know, I talk about it in my book. My grandfather's house was the highest house in the city of Boston. And in the 40s, my mom and her brothers, they had one pair of skis and one pair of leather boots, and they skied down the medium strip of the West Roxbury Parkway. And they had fun. And when they finally moved us out of the city, we lived on a hill. And we built jumps over the neighbors' fences and landed in their yards. And we played outdoors, right? And that is the community that is winter sports. That's tubing, that's snowboarding, that's skiing, that's snow biking, that's snowshoeing, right? And that playfulness is what's the center of any community. You know, the fact that you can play in the streets, you know, in the neighborhoods, and the fact that you can play on our slopes. Today, in today's state of the art industry, that looks like uphill traffic, right? It looks like managing the uphill traffic with the downhill operations, including grooming and ski patrol, and how you embrace that community. And I think there's a lot of learning still to do in that area to make that a home run. That looks like tubing. And for Tenney, we had equally or more calls for tubing during Christmas week than we did for skiing and snowboarding. Families want to get outside. They want to have fun and they want to be included. And Tenney offering that to that wider community and making it a priority builds community. But more importantly, you know, our slogan at Tenney is have a great day at Tenney. It's a great day at Tenney. When we answer the phone, it's a great day at Tenney, right? And that starts with the parking lot attendant. Starts with you're getting out of the car and welcome, you're here. And I've always been proud of this 22 years ago and today. Our parking lot attendants are the most over-educated parking lot attendants you can find. They're PhDs, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're retirees that are successful that want to invest their time in Tenney. And I love that. But really, Stuart, at the heart of skiing are ski bums, passionate skiers and snowboarders that are dedicating a part of their year to skiing and riding. And you have to ask yourself, where are the resorts that are making room for this community from housing, from jobs, and has it even been lost? It's arguable it's been lost. You know, the days of me, you know, back in the day of me washing dishes at night to ski all day, every day, you know, where's that? That's how you drive community. When you have waitresses and waiters and restaurants saying, God, I skied today, right? And it was awesome. Where's the local passes for that community to make it accessible to that demographic in our mountain towns around North America? It's been lost. So when you don't have your locals at the gas station, at Dunkin' Donuts, at the local coffee shops and skiing, you've lost community. So we need to focus in on that, you know, to get those school kids skiing, to get those workforces skiing, and not be so lost and blinded by margin and what we're charging them to do it.
What's your plan to do that at Tenney? Is it reaching out to local schools? Is it, you know, continuing to build out the mountain? Is it all these things? Kind of how do you approach creating that experience?
The only way I know how to do that is how it was done for me in the 70s and the 80s, which was there was one opportunity to do that, and two, an invitation to do that. Local pros, local ski industry people, I want them to be a part of the Tenney community, right? I want the greater ski areas around us to be part of the Tenney community. I send them passes. I send them lessons, you know, letters, emails. Hey, come see us at Tenney, right? It's not a message of make a reservation, right? I mean, That's the wrong message for community. Make a reservation. I don't want people to have to make reservations. I want them to show up, be able to afford it, and enjoy themselves.
This is an interesting bit about ski culture. And as you mentioned, you've skied all over the world and spend time each year in different parts of the world skiing. What is it about New England that is so special culturally? And do you think that it gets unfairly shoved into the shadows by the West and the bigger mountains and bigger snowfalls? What does New England skiing mean to you and to be a ski bum and the ski culture in New England?
I love it. I've invested my whole life in being a ski bum, right? Like, I always say skiing saved me and almost killed me all in the same breath, right? Like, I'm committed to that culture. And so what does that look like? That looks like the West loves to call it the Ice Coast, right? But why? They don't understand weather. They can't ski it. They don't have the skill, right? And in New England, we turn our chin to the wind and we go anyways. When I host Warren Miller Films all throughout New England, and particularly this year during Christmas, in New England, you don't need snow to have fun at a ski area. We're not counting, how many inches, we have fun when we ski, not because we have fresh snow. Does fresh snow make it better? Of course. But we have fun skiing. And when you look at the core group having fun skiing, it's family and friends sharing it together, right? And that looks like in the rain, that looks like in the cold, that looks like on a perfect powder day. And I've always argued with the West, for as many perfect powder days they have out there, we have here, right? But what we're known for is terrain. What we're known for are conditions where you have to hone your skills. Like, it means something to be from the East. It means something. Why did Ted Ligety go to GMVS, right? Like, to ski in the East. Darren Rawls, to ski in the East. To ski the hardest slopes around the world, they came to the East to learn it. And that is our calling card around the world. Waterville Valley has hosted more World Cups than any other ski area in New England and arguably the country. And when I'm in Europe and I say, where are you from? And I say Waterville Valley, people know where Waterville Valley is. Because Tomba won at Waterville Valley, right? Keeley raced at Cannon. This is not lost on the core ski racing fans in Europe. It's known. So when you have World Cups at Killington today, and you see 30,000 people coming out to Michaela, you see the power of the East Coast. The East Coast, we provide more percentage of skiers to the West and to Europe than any other region in the country. We are the skiing capital of North America.
So how much pride do you have in playing this part of resuscitating, reviving this great classic New England ski area?
I love it. Like, for me, how many people get a chance to get the keys to the kingdom, right? To somebody to say, go do it. Create the ski area that you've envisioned. Bring to it the experience. I did the last interview with Tommy Corcoran, who founded Waterville Valley. And in that movie, the 50 year, it's a 51st, Tom speaks about building a place where people can have fun, right? Building a place of joy. And I think that is at the core what we're doing at ski areas. We're building a place for people to have fun and to enjoy themselves. And when that's lost in the management, it's lost to the consumer. My message to all ski area professionals is, if you can't get outside your office and ride those lifts, how do we expect people to drive hours in snowstorms and wait in line to do it and pay for it? Why aren't more ski area operators skiing? Why aren't they skiing more of their competition and seeing what other people are offering? Why aren't they out there enjoying the views from the top? We inducted Rusty into the Hall of Fame last year. And one of the things he talked about was his day as an operator, loving the view at Mammoth. And he talked about it in his speech. You can find it online. It's awesome. And to me, it went to the core of why we're doing it. Like, it's okay that there's an adult in the room steering the industry and helping an industry full of ski bums and powder hounds be successful. But don't forget to enjoy it.
Yeah, I ask that question anytime I go skiing with an operator. Do you get out every day? And I'm surprised with the number that do and really actually do love that part of their job. One of the aspects of bringing Tenney back, and I don't want to let this get away, is that you really can't build new ski areas in New England these days. Maybe someone will one day, but it's almost impossible, just given all kinds of different factors. So it's really important that we save the ones we have. How much have you thought about that part of it, Dan? And just, if you don't save Tenney, it's just going to fade back into the mountain. And each year that it sits, it's going to be harder and harder to bring it back. So how vital was that for you as a consideration when you decided to take this project on as the general manager for the second time?
Well, it's look, if you don't have to go far to see what happens to communities when ski areas close. Look at Ascutney. And Ascutney, look at the effort it took for the community to revive something there, right? It took dollars. It took commitment from the community to do that. Here we have a private owner willing to put the money in, not just for the skiing and the development and his own interests, but for the community interest. That's a rare thing. It's a unique opportunity. It should not be lost on people. And for me personally, to bring Tenney back, it brings back the market I think the industry has walked away from. And that for me as a skier, you know, skiing changed my life. It opened up a world of opportunities to me that I never would have seen. And it brought me to places that are unbelievable, where people didn't know you could even ski. And Tenney has the ability to do that for young people today that desperately need a place to recreate and get outside and to be free and to make decisions. Do I go left, right? Do I go straight? How much speed for the jump? Should I go through the woods? Should I stay on the trails? Should I ski with my parents? Should I go with my buddies? All those decisions are helpful when you're growing up, because it's about confidence, it's about independence, and it's about creativity. And you get to experience that when you strap on skis and snowboards. And that, for me to do in this community where I'm very vested in Central New Hampshire, you know, I've been the middle school soccer coach. I'm involved with this community. I love this community. And I would say that this community has supported me. And I see that at Tenney. I see the community show up, and that makes me want to do it.
So you have a really strong vision, and a lot of that is grounded in the past and your experience with it, but you're also operating it in the modern world, and you've begun to dabble in the world of multi-mountain passes, which is just a reality, right? Love them or hate them, they're here to stay. Tenney's been part of the No Boundaries Pass for these first two seasons. What are your thoughts on that product? Are you happy with that so far?
Well, I love any entrepreneur that's willing to risk, right? And see a vision. I mean, what they're trying to do is support small ski areas that have been sort of left out of the big multi-resort passes, right? But that all takes time. That all takes their own investment and momentum. But at the end of the day, those passes are designed to offset the ticket window cost. So for me, what's the real issue? Ticket window cost and accessibility to the skiing. And I don't want families to have to be experts in navigating the economics of skiing to enjoy skiing.
So No Boundaries is a small product. They have just three mountains. Indy Pass is on a much larger scale, and they operate by giving you a percentage of whatever your listed rate is for your ticket. Has Indy Pass approached you? Have you considered joining that coalition?
Yeah, we're taking a look at Indy. I mean, it's a viable option. It's a great product. And again, my hat's off to Doug Fish for creating, seeing the opportunity and creating a pass that has filled the niche. My question is, why should small independent ski areas offer up their revenue to a third party to get a percentage back? Economically, without volume, it doesn't work. Although the consumer loves it, right? Why do they love it? Because skiing's cheap. Well, we're devaluing the product when we do that. And should we be devaluing the product to do that and at the same time raising the ticket window price? I get it. Look, these passes only exist because of the breakage or the non-usage. Like, we have to stop lying to ourselves in the ski industry. This is about non-usage, not usage, right? And, you know, as a small ski area operator, I need the margin to survive. Why should I share it with a third party that's not investing in me?
Yes. So what you do control is the Tenney season pass, and you offered one this year for $450. as you prepare to launch your 24 to 25 season passes, which I don't believe you have yet as of March 14th, correct me if I'm wrong, how did that first season go? How do you feel about that price point? What can we expect out of 2024 to 25 season passes at Tenney?
Well, I think the original pass that the pass price I inherited, you know, I don't know if that was the best value play in the market, right? But it is what we had, and we were happy with the results of that. Do we want to sell more? Yeah, flat out. We are announcing our pass prices coming up here in the next few days. It's lower than last year's price for a certain time. And I think it offers value to the in the marketplace for an alternative. And I think you have to take a look at today's environment. When a seasoned professional like myself, for me, the multi-bass products, I buy them because they're so cheap. And I don't talk to the marketing directors, right? Like, it's a great thing for me to access the mountain, but if it's so cheap that a guy that doesn't need to buy lift tickets are buying it, right? How good is that? It's not that good. And I don't need to buy lift tickets. Trust me, I have made a career out of not buying lift tickets. So you have to look at the value play. And what we've done with skiing now, and good for Tenney, this is where Tenney can win. You can afford to buy sort of a multi-resort pass, New England pass, and in addition to that, a Tenney pass, right? And that's still cheaper than what we used to pay in the 90s for a season pass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so that's what our hope is for Tenney. Like, we don't have to be your primary resort, but we're making skiing affordable that you'll still come and you'll enjoy it. Like, when you're tired of waiting in lift lines, when you're tired of looking over your shoulders, see if you're going to run over, you'll come back to Tenney.
Yeah, the wild card for me as I look at the New Hampshire, I track season passes pretty closely. The wild card for Tenney seems to be Ragged because they have those two high-speed lifts, and they had the last year it was priced at $399. They call it the Mission Affordable Pass. They have some great glades. It's a really, really fun mountain. I really like Ragged a lot. That seems to be your primary, because it seems like you would have some market overlap there. So that would be a big consideration, along with the Northeast Value Epic Pass, which gives you unlimited Attitash and Wildcat. I realize those are a little bit of a hike from you, but in a whole bunch of other ski areas. So how much are you considering all those different dynamics as you look at the right price point for Tenney?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it all, right? I ski Ragged. I've brought ski teams to Ragged. Ragged is a great product. But when you look at the main core consumer base at Ragged, you have what I call the core skiing family, right? They're committed. They have weekend programs. They're an established skier location, right? And let's face it. I mean, their investment in snowmaking is top notch. It's awesome. We're not there yet. So we have to, I wouldn't say compete against Ragged. We need to be an alternative to Ragged. And what's that look like? No lift lines and non-crowded slopes. Like, come on up. You can afford to do both and see what we have to offer. Look at our view of skiing as different. So I don't know that we're in direct competition with that product, because that's a really established product, as is the countless other ski areas around us. We are truly an alternative. We're a place where you come and you discover something different. Now, that might be less snowmaking. That might be a slower lift, but it doesn't mean you're going to have less fun.
That is an excellent place to walk off, Dan. I want to thank you so much for your time today. I love the story you're telling at Tenney. I wish you all the best of luck. It sounds like big things are happening, and I can't wait to see it all unfold. So best of luck to you. And what's next for you? Are you off to Europe?
Yeah, off to Europe. Going to spend, you know, my springtime home in Val d'Isère, France, with my friends and my community over there skiing. And I just, you know, invite everybody to get out there, go one more day and go enjoy it. And thank you, Stuart. I appreciate being included in your podcast.
You got it. Thanks so much for the time and insight, Dan. Really appreciate it. That's Dan Egan, if you need him. Dan, that was terrific. I hope you were having an awesome, awesome spring in France. What a great comeback season for Tenney. I cannot wait to see what becomes of the place. Tenney Nation, what did you think about that? Pretty compelling vision, right? This is not a mountain or an owner that is going to be content being left behind. Big, big things ahead if they can stick with it, and I really hope they can. Thank you so much for listening. New Hampshire, that is one of many in-state conversations I have planned for you in the months ahead. I already have a fantastic conversation recorded with retiring Gunstock General Manager Tom Day, and I have the leaders of Mount Centipede and Wildcat scheduled for appearances in the coming months. Please visit stormskiing.com and subscribe to the Storm Skiing newsletter to ensure you get new podcasts the moment they're live. New pods appear in your email inbox several hours before syncing with the podcast services, including Apple and Spotify. There are free and paid tiers of the newsletter, and paid subscribers receive podcasts 7 days before everyone else. You can also follow The Storm on X and Instagram at Storm Ski Journal. Until next time, stay well, stay safe. I'm Stuart Winchester, and I will talk to you again very soon.
The Storm Skiing Podcast is a Quicksilver Films production.